We spent the last few months thinking a lot about food delivery, its history, what it offers, its weak points. And over the course of this season, we've heard from a ton of people about this complicated system. Some people love it.
Blowing it out, drinking, and getting Burger King delivered to our house. It's the best. It's the best thing ever.
And even if you aren't the one ordering food yourself, a lot of people appreciate the concept still. Like Patricia Stamper, a DoorDash driver in D.C.
I do believe it does create some equality and equity, especially for people that are disabled and physically and our seniors.
But who really gets to take advantage of food delivery services? For Willie Solis, a delivery driver in Denton, Texas, the price of delivery limits who gets to order it.
I think a lot of people see this as an essential service now, or something that's a very convenient thing for them to do. But for the large majority of people, it is a luxury. And the reality of that luxury is that there's a cost to it.
The last time I ordered delivery, I tipped in cash. The drivers we talked to didn't all agree on whether cash tips were better, but I was prepared with my bills, and I think that helped my driver get paid and move quickly to his next order.
But all this begs the question, shouldn't the price of delivered food reflect the actual cost of making and delivering it? Here's Tim Ma, owner of Lucky Danger in D.C.
You know, I do think there needs to be an adjustment in the cost of food in America, or just kind of in general, the cost of food. Like, the cost to produce it is a lot more expensive than what we pay for it. But I'm not sure systemically we're all ready for that yet.
That's a big question, and it's a hard one for restaurants to tackle. A lot of them feel like they have no choice. Here's Emmeline Rood, a food historian. She used to work in restaurants.
Delivery was kind of a constant struggle. Delivery apps took so much of your percentage, like everyone would complain about it, like you couldn't control the customer experience, like you didn't know when it would arrive or the things. It was like a necessary evil almost, like we couldn't not offer delivery.
But delivery isn't all bad. Lori Hashimoto, the owner of a Japanese eatery in Phoenix, told us she'd never partner with a third-party delivery app, so she created her own in-house system. And she's really grown to love it as a way to stay close to her customers during this pandemic.
To be able to connect, I think, has been a great thing for us when it has come to delivery. I truly believe that delivery has been something that has kind of been a savior in the sense of being able to get out of the restaurant, stretch your legs, see that happy, smiling, familiar face, say hello.
So we started this season with like just our own takes about delivery, but now we have a lot of other perspectives to weigh. And quite frankly, I still feel pretty conflicted about this whole food delivery thing.
I understand that. I get that. I'm with you. But let's try something. I'm going to do what I do whenever a friend wants to talk about hard and difficult things. I basically just begin the conversation asking if they need to vent or if they're in solutions mode.
Okay, what does that mean?
Like, if my friend just needs to vent about something and get something off their chest, I don't want to weigh them down with questions or suggestions about how they can, like, fix their problem or, like, find a solution to like, the issue that they're facing. Because sometimes you just need to get your emotions out before you actually tackle a problem, right?
Oh, yes. I definitely know what this is. And this is, like, one of my hangups. I'm just, like, unable to deal with people's emotions. So I immediately go into solutions mode.
Okay, well, that's something I definitely deal with too, which is why I started to ask. But anyway, I feel like when we first started this season, I was fully venting about food delivery. Okay, this box is, I just unboxed these fries and the flaps are like so wet. They're like sopping. I'm gonna try one of these fries. Oh yeah, that's, you hear that?
No.
Yeah, exactly. There's no crunch to these fries. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot about this world that's worth venting about, food delivery included.
And if you look at my Twitter feed, it's just like all complaints about sports. It's horrible.
Yeah, I never know what you're talking about. You're like subtweeting an entire industry.
Exactly.
Anyway, another rant for another podcast. back to food delivery. I feel like we've been thinking hard about the history, current sustainability, and equity of the labor model when it comes to delivery for the past season. And Patrick, I feel like we should be past venting at this point. Like, I think we need to be in solutions mode now.
Agreed. We've talked about how delivery has become necessary for survival, but it's still really tough on restaurants who don't have the bandwidth to run it themselves. We've talked about how third-party platforms made it easier for restaurants, but their services are expensive and often take advantage of the people actually delivering the food. Personally, I've tried to boycott the big delivery platforms, but that won't fix the status quo.
Right. Delivery basically feels like, at this point, it's here to stay. So is there any way to make the process better? This is Dish City. I'm Ruth Tam.
And I'm Patrick Fort. We tell stories about food to understand the places we live. This season has been all about delivery.
We've traced the history of food delivery from how society first decided this was all a good idea to the promises and problems created by food delivery apps.
On today's episode, people are trying to solve those problems. What's working and what isn't?
In our search for solutions, we want to talk about two different places where people are trying to reimagine food delivery. Let's begin in Beechwood, Ohio.
Beechwood, Ohio is a small suburb east of Cleveland. Most of its residents are over 50 years old, and the area is on the more affluent side. And it's the kind of place that really takes pride in what it can offer its residents.
We have a dog park. It's an all-synthetic turf dog park.
This is Beechwood Mayor Martin Horowitz.
We actually just won an award for the use of synthetic turf. You know, if you had a podcast on synthetic turf dog parks, we would have probably been on it already.
He grew up here, raised his family here, and most of all, he loves being there.
It's a small town. It's only 5 square miles. We have about 12,000 residents. But you go to the pool in the summer, we've got 1,000 people there on a weekend. I want to say most people know each other.
At least from a few hundred miles away, Beechwood kind of reminds me of where I grew up, the dining scene, at least. It's a mix of chains and a few small local spots.
We don't have a lot of the chef-driven restaurants. We have a mix. We have Italian, we have Chinese, we have delicatessen, we have a little of everything.
When the pandemic hit Beechwood, the city had to do what every other city had to do. Restaurants shut down, social distancing became the norm, and local leaders had to figure out how to support businesses affected by the restrictions they put into place. But while other cities put together grant programs for local businesses, Beechwood looked at the money they had and tried to figure out a different way to support local restaurants. Their answer? Delivery.
Jokingly, we used to say, if we can transport a senior, we can transport a pizza.
The idea came from a woman named Karen Carmen. She was a longtime city employee whose department helped bring seniors to medical appointments. Before she retired in January, Karen said, "What if we create a city-run delivery service?" Like us, the city of Beechwood was aware that restaurants were turning to delivery during the pandemic, but they were shocked at how much third-party delivery platforms charged restaurants to deliver the food.
They took Karen's idea and ran with it. The city was going to try to keep restaurants open with their own delivery service. But unlike third-party delivery apps, they weren't going to try to make money off the program. They called it Beechwood Delivers. Here's how it worked. Rather than using a third-party delivery app, diners would call in their order at a participating restaurant. Then that restaurant would call the city's dispatchers. And then, using an app, a driver would be assigned to pick up the order. And remember, this is all free, so customers wouldn't pay extra for delivery and the city wouldn't charge restaurants a commission. The plan was to help restaurants through the winter, from December through January.
I'm not gonna lie, it was a little nerve-wracking the first couple nights.
This is Shannon Diamond. She was tasked with hammering out logistics, because even though Beechwood could transport seniors, there were still a lot of things to figure out before the city got into the delivery game.
You have no idea what to expect. No clue. We started the first night and we had no idea how many calls were going to come in. We didn't know if the app was going to work. We didn't know how many of us could be on the computer at the same time. We didn't know if the restaurants were going to be able to give us the best pickup time to dispatch the drivers in a reasonable amount of time. We were kind of in the dark.
Getting the city into a business that they had never done before was no small feat. Beyond the logistics they had to handle, they didn't know if they could make food delivery a part of local food culture. Beechwood is a small residential town, and although some people knew and used the third-party delivery apps, there were still a lot of unknowns as to whether or not the city's program would have the effect that they hoped.
We didn't know if it would be accepted. We didn't know if the residents would take part in it. We didn't know how it would work for the restaurants, if they thought it was going to be too much for them to have to call us to place the delivery order. We had a good idea, but until you actually execute it, you really don't know what's going to happen.
Shannon put this program together and was going to be a dispatcher, but she also needed drivers to actually dispatch. So the city put out the word.
Well, COVID has certainly taken a toll on the restaurant business, and that's prompted one local suburb to help support its eateries during this pandemic by launching a city-backed food delivery service. 19 News reporter Saida Abbas has the details.
Here is the offer. Drivers would be hired as independent contractors. They'd work a guaranteed 4 hours a day from 4 to 8 p.m., four nights a week, and they'd earn $20 an hour, no matter how many orders they completed. And although no one on the city payroll can receive gifts, Beechwood made sure drivers could still accept tips. This offer aired on the local news, and it hooked Rick Techmeyer. Rick is a veteran firefighter on the east side of Cleveland. He already had a full-time job, but he also had some flexibility in his schedule. And he was looking for a side gig to help pay for his wedding.
It just was, you know, right place, right time. I happened to be watching the news that morning and was like, sure, I'll throw my name into the hat, and see what happens.
The fact that Beechwood Delivers was temporary and was only supposed to last several months was perfect for Rick.
Plus, the city provided auto insurance, masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, and reflective vests.
Beechwood has us wear like a safety vest, like a road safety vest, and a little tag that says we're Beechwood Delivery. So we're like real nerdy looking when we go to the restaurant. Everyone knows who we are. And like, we see each other like, hey, bro, what's up? Like the road guard vest, you're looking sharp.
Are you the cool kids of the delivery?
I feel like we're not. I feel like other delivery drivers would be giving us wedgies if they caught us, you know, working their turf.
Rick and his fellow road crew may have looked a little nerdy, but they were also making a guaranteed $320 a week plus tips. If you listen to our last episode on driving for third-party delivery apps, you'll notice that Beechwood Delivers is different from the DoorDashes of the world. Because although different apps allow you to schedule your work, drivers do not have a set shift, and there's no guaranteed hourly wage.
Beechwood Delivers kicked off in December 2020, with city employees like Shannon on the dispatch and drivers like Rick ready to deliver orders.
Beechwood Delivers, this is Shannon.
Hi, I have a pickup for Cedar Creek Girl.
Okay, and who is it going to?
After taking down the name of the person who placed the order, their contact info, and the order total, Shannon would use a delivery app to send the order to a driver.
And what time will it be ready?
6:20.
All right, we'll send somebody out accordingly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Then a driver like Rick would head to the restaurant and pick up the order.
Hey, man.
How are you?
Good, how are you? Good. Hello, Beechwood Delivers for Tracy. All right. All right. Yeah, you guys have a good evening.
We'll see you later. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Most orders were contactless, so customers would typically leave an envelope in their screen door that said Beechwood Delivers with some cash in it to tip their driver. Rick would ring the doorbell, wait for them to look outside their door or window, and he'd show them where he was placing their food.
Some folks will like answer the door and want to, you know, will hand off the food. But most of the time it's, you know, folks that are, you know, they want to stay completely contactless. And I feel that's completely appropriate because we want to make them feel safe.
Delivery drivers were more or less satisfied with Beechwood Delivers because even if the night was slow, they still got paid an hourly wage to be on call for delivery. And Rick says their tips covered gas, so he didn't feel like he was stuck with a bunch of hidden costs.
You get, you know, $15-$20 in a evening of delivery would be an average night of tips. So that more than covers gas. I'm rocking a Kia Forte, so I get like a million miles to the gallon. I fill up my tank like twice a month.
And what were things like for customers? Even though the city worried Beachwood diners wouldn't be super into delivery, a lot of them were all in from the beginning. Rick remembers his first order.
The lady was actually like out on her front porch, excited that we were coming. And we took the proof of delivery, and she wanted to like be in the picture because you take a picture of the address. And she was like, yay!
Beachwood Delivers was only meant to last 2 months, but the city extended it twice, doubling their planned runtime. It officially ended in March 2021. When we asked how much it cost to hire drivers and pay for advertising, PPE, and use the dispatching app, Beachwood tells us the city's total bill for those 4 months came out to over $26,000.
But the city's program made nearly three times that in revenue for local restaurants, saving them nearly $23,000 in commissions. So the city declared Beachwood Delivers a success. But what did local restaurants think?
It probably saved us about $2,500 in delivery fees.
This is Lawrence Shibley. He's the CEO of Yours Truly Restaurant Group in Northeast Ohio. And he and his siblings run a network of 9 local diners under the Yours Truly name. They're popular for their not-so fries, which are apparently fries dressed up as nachos. They've even trademarked it. The family's first and oldest location is in Beachwood. And when the city contacted them about listing Yours Truly with Beachwood Delivers, Lawrence said yes. The $2,500 that Yours Truly saved on delivery commissions may sound small, but to Lawrence, it meant a lot.
So it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but during, you know, when you're primarily shut down and you've got all these other expenses related with trying to keep employees, et cetera, you know, to save $2,500 was a big deal when your revenue is way down. That's your electric bill for the month.
The money made a difference. But what was it like to work the system that the city had set up? Managing orders from Beachwood Delivers wasn't totally straightforward. Remember, every time someone placed a delivery order at Yours Truly, someone at the restaurant would have to call the city and put in that order with someone like Shannon. Every order required 2 calls, one to take the order and one to send it to the dispatcher.
There was nothing automated about it. So we had to call the Beachwood for the delivery. But, you know, it worked out.
Because Yours Truly is a chain of diners, Lawrence has restaurants in other cities. So he's gotten assistance from other local governments during this time, too. But in terms of which program offered the most impact, he says it's no contest.
Well, I think it's hands down, it's what the city of Beachwood did. I believe most of the other municipalities that we dealt with were asking people to go to restaurants and whatever. There wasn't much teeth in the way of supporting the local businesses and restaurants. But the idea of a municipality partnering with a business to try to make things better has an enormous value.
In the long run, Lawrence actually isn't super into the idea of using tax dollars to compete with private companies.
Fundamentally, I have a problem with that. And I don't think it's right for the government to use its money to compete with private industry like Uber Eats or DoorDash. But, you know, in an extreme situation, whatever works, whatever you can make happen, I think that was helpful. It's free to everybody. So the city is paying all the cost. So, I mean, it's a form of socialism that we kind of liked.
Beachwood Delivers seemed like it helped restaurants, the businesses that the city was trying to protect during the pandemic. But it's not lost on us that in order for the program to work, the city couldn't think of it as a money-making enterprise. If they were in this to make money like DoorDash or Uber Eats, they'd probably have to charge restaurants or eliminate their hourly wage for drivers, or both. And that would cancel out the reason they got into the delivery business in the first place.
Beachwood Delivers was only ever meant to be temporary, and maybe that's why it worked. They had city employees who normally worked on other programs, which were canceled by the pandemic, and they got reassigned to be delivery dispatchers. And they had the tax revenue to hire drivers and fund the program. So if you don't like how third-party platforms do delivery, there are ways to challenge that model, but it'll cost you.
What if you want to challenge third-party delivery apps, but actually survive as a business? That's after the break.
Delivery apps are businesses first, designed around the goal of making money. Beachwood, though, had a different goal: support local restaurants, meet the needs of the community. But what if you want to make delivery better and also make it your business? Meet Adam Fry.
Yeah, so I have been in hospitality in bars specifically for about a decade.
Adam Fry is the co-owner of Ivy and Coney, a bar in D.C. And for a long time before the pandemic, he was trying very hard to keep his place off of third-party delivery platforms. The word he uses to describe their practices is predatory.
But when the pandemic started, something had to give. Adam and his fellow co-owners of Ivy and Coney signed up for Grubhub, and his concerns about those platforms were quickly validated.
When we reopened a few weeks into it offering delivery, there was one point where we had four orders that came through, and within a couple of minutes, seven drivers showed up expecting to pick it up, and we were just kind of like, I don't know what to tell you guys. We have four orders. These are the four orders. Like, do you know who is supposed to take which order? And some of them were like, I need this person's order. And some of them were like, I'm at the wrong restaurant. We were unable to then deal with any new orders that were coming in because we were trying to manage the drivers. And it was kind of like, why are we doing this? If this is what the pandemic is, let's call it. And so it was pretty much at that point that we were like, we're not going to work with Grubhub anymore.
So partnering with a big third-party delivery platform was out. But knowing that food delivery had to be a big part of their survival during the pandemic, they chose to do something ambitious.
The decision to get off the platform was made synonymously with the decision to try to do our own delivery.
Allow us to introduce you to DC Togogo. DC Togogo is, yes, Adam's third-party delivery platform. And for the customer, the experience is pretty similar if you've ordered food on any delivery app. You download the DC Togogo app, you select a restaurant, order food, and it gets delivered to your door. But the difference between DC Togogo and the major third-party delivery apps is what's going on behind the scenes. Many of the big delivery apps charge somewhere between 15 and 30% based on the plan restaurants sign up for. So DC Togogo set their fees substantially lower, from 5 to 15%.
We didn't want to make it to become rich, capital R rich. We wanted to make it so that we could have a way to support the restaurant industry. And if there were profits, we wanted to be able to reinvest some of those in our partnering restaurants or in restaurant initiatives that helped restaurant workers navigate unemployment issues. There were so many places where the restaurant industry was being just stepped on that there needed to be some sort of funneling to those issues.
Adam hired delivery drivers as employees of DC Togogo. They got sick days, and they were paid at least $18 an hour. Adam says his goal was to help local restaurants, including his own. But this is also exactly what the big companies say they're trying to do, too. It's fascinating to me that the solution to the apps is also to create an app, like particularly because his experience with Grubhub seemed so frustrating.
Okay, sure. But I don't think it's the concept of an app that Adam really has a problem with. His gripes are more about the business practices, right? The high commissions on restaurants and the disorganization of the whole experience. That's what he's trying to solve for, not the type of tech delivery runs on.
I guess that makes sense. When we talked to DoorDash, the company told us that even though food delivery spiked during the pandemic, it's a, quote, sticky habit, one that's going to remain with us even after restaurants open back up. So if you change the business behind it, I guess it makes sense to think of an app as a solution, especially when so many people are just used to ordering food on an app nowadays anyway.
I think my big question, though, is the fact that Uber Eats, DoorDash, and Grubhub are already out there. Did DC2Gogo want to be as big as one of them?
So when DC2Gogo first started out, Adam had a humble goal. He just wanted a small piece of the delivery pie, just enough to shift power away from third-party delivery apps, to make it so they weren't the default in DC.
I would have been happy with a, you know, a 10%, 20% market share in DC. That would have been awesome because our model allowed for that level of market share to generate a pretty significant amount of revenue and then profit that could be reinvested into the community. And so for me personally, 10% market share was kind of the dream.
When DC2Gogo came online, people were excited. You might remember last spring as the time of save our local restaurants and celebrate the essential worker. And DC2Gogo, this scrappy local business run by small business owners, was seen as a leader in this wave of support. But almost immediately, DC2Gogo ran into some challenges.
First, there was scale. One of DC2Gogo's problems was delivery range. At $18 an hour, Adam couldn't afford to pay for a fleet of drivers right away. And he wanted to maintain the quality of the food that was going out. So DC2Gogo generally had a 2-mile delivery radius, and this made citywide delivery really hard.
So while they got a lot of good press, they couldn't actually deliver to everyone who wanted to try them. That includes me. I really wanted to use DC2Gogo, but I was just outside of their delivery range. And when it came to customers they could deliver to, they were still competing with apps that had way bigger budgets.
We had just gotten some really great publicity and seen a spike in users. And then all of a sudden, Uber Eats had DC-specific ads with Patrick Stewart and Mark Hamill.
Tonight, I'll be eating 4 cheese tortellini with extra tomatoes.
Stewart, so it's come to this.
Thank you. Bravo.
DC2Gogo, the scrappy underdog, going up against Luke Skywalker and Captain Picard.
And I was just like, whoa, what am I supposed to do here? Like, and that is just, that is very emblematic of what some of the challenges are.
One of the biggest things that set DC2Gogo apart from their competitors was the fact that they charged restaurants way less to use their delivery service. DC2Gogo's commissions didn't go higher than 15%, while other apps like DoorDash maxed out at 30%.
But during the pandemic, DC government followed other cities and limited all third-party delivery apps to a 15% commission. All of a sudden, DC2Gogo lost a ton of leverage. Now, Adam's business model was no longer competitive. Not to mention DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Grubhub, they all had seemingly no limit to who they were able to deliver to. So ultimately, the only thing Adam could offer restaurants were good vibes?
Yeah, why, you know, use us because we are local and we support local businesses in a different sort of more customized and personal way, but, you know, you get our marketing budget instead of Patrick Stewart and Mark Hamill.
Basically, Adam says there was no reason for restaurants to choose DC2Gogo over any of the big delivery platforms because they couldn't deliver to more customers, and they certainly couldn't match their advertising capabilities. So even though the idea of local restaurants partnering with a local delivery business was super appealing, Adam couldn't get enough local restaurants to list exclusively on his platform.
With that reality staring Adam in the face, it meant the end. DC2Gogo closed its digital doors in April of this year. Adam's experience with DC2Gogo may lead you to believe that it's impossible to solve the problems third-party delivery apps have created while also making money. But Adam feels like he was onto something. While DC to Go-Go ended up not surviving, his bar did, and so did many other restaurants that use the platform. And this is why Adam says there is a future for small delivery services.
I very much do. I think that there's a lot of nuance and there are going to be a lot of, you know, attempts and failures, or if you don't want to call them that, there will be lots of other smaller things, whether they get gobbled up by bigger ones or live and fade or live in a smaller market share. I think they're sustainable.
And I think he might be right. Even though Beachwood Delivers and DC to Go-Go aren't in the delivery business anymore, the reviews were, on the whole, positive. They gave the people and businesses they served a new way to think about delivery.
And there are other small food delivery services that are doing the same around the country. There's a DC company called Skip the Line, for example, which started off as one of those companies that was known for literally sending a person to hold a spot in a no reservations restaurant line for you. During the pandemic, they've expanded to food delivery. There's also Black and Mobile, a Black-owned third-party delivery service based in Philadelphia designed to support Black-owned restaurants. Beyond Philly, they've got a presence in Atlanta, Baltimore, and Detroit. So if we're in solutions mode, what exactly is the solution here?
Well, I think it's easy to get stuck on the question of how do I make a better delivery system? Like, especially since both Beachwood Delivers and DC to Go-Go aren't operating anymore. But the thing that I see in common between both of them is this sense of community.
If food delivery is currently a very fragile relationship between diners, drivers, and restaurants, making food delivery better would require everyone involved to want to improve the system, right? And not just for themselves. Diners would have to care about drivers, drivers would have to care about restaurants. It wouldn't all be about simply fulfilling an order, like checking off a box. But what does that actually take? Apps like DoorDash that highlight nearby restaurants and slogans like Save Our Local Restaurants, all these things have sold people on the idea of community. But if it takes a pandemic for us to actually buy into that, then yikes.
Yeah, but there are some reasons to be hopeful.
Right. It seems like better delivery is definitely a work in progress. But throughout all the stories we've heard on this season, I feel like I can start to see some of the elements that could make it more sustainable.
Yeah, we need to recognize that these services offer different things to restaurants, drivers, and diners. Otherwise, you wind up with what we have now, where food delivery companies overpromise what they can offer to all of these groups. It's a lot, and yet better delivery does seem possible. We've spent a long time thinking about how food delivery works, how it started. It's been a journey.
Yeah, when we started off this season, I was pretty anti-delivery, mostly because as a person who has resigned herself to the schlepping element of living in a city, I feel like I can just go out and get the food myself. Feeding myself is a big part of being independent.
So last week, we met up at the place where this season started, our editor Ponzi's house. I brought over food from a favorite local bar to try to convince Ruth once and for all that fries can be good delivered.
All right, it took me longer than I would have liked to park, which may be my undoing. We will find out. Best of luck to me. Not that much food, actually.
All right. No. Let's eat some fried food, Ruth.
What did you bring me?
Open the bag.
All right. Can you tell me what this container titled Slash Balls entails? What lies beyond these box flaps, Patrick?
Slash balls are like jalapeno poppers, but
it says slash balls and the other one says nug.
Open the other one. That's the most critical one.
Okay. Waffle fries?
Waffle fries.
How far do these travel?
Well, I picked them up at 6.
It's 6:22. This is promising. Do you hear that? Look, they're definitely not crisp, but they're not like, they're not as bad as the ones.
Yeah.
On our first.
So it's
episode.
An improvement. This is victory.
Should I turn on the toast, Robin?
God, you guys are the worst. Yeah, okay, wait, so at the beginning of the season, the first time we did this,
yep.
And we had fries, you were talking about how, I think like, to sum it up, you were at best skeptical about the idea of delivery. How do you feel now?
I was very anti-delivery. And I think like for reasons that, like when you look back, it's not like super surprising. Like we talked to my dad, like, he's a very, very frugal man. We were a very frugal family. We still are. And, like, I think the idea of schlepping as a lifestyle is something that is obviously, like, appealed to me. Like, not just because, like, it gets, like, stuff done for me, but that's just, like, how I was raised, okay? But, like, I think over the past year and just, like, throughout, like, adulthood, I'm really trying not – I'm getting farther and farther away from the idea of schlepping as like some sort of virtue. Like, oh, I did this myself. Like I did it the hard way. That means something good about me. Like I no longer think that.
I think when I first discovered food delivery for myself, I think it was in college, but I thought of it kind of as like a fun activity. It didn't really like replace anything. It was just like, I'm in college, and like it was an activity. I've been aware that it, like, food delivery has been there for me when I can't or am like unable to cook for myself for whatever reason. I think I've kind of known that. We were recording something a few weeks ago, and in the middle of the recording, I just like started crying for like an undiscernible reason. I was just like really stressed out about this episode that we were working on, and then you, like 20 minutes later, you were like, go outside in like 10 minutes. And I was like, what is this about? And like, you had ordered donuts, and I love donuts, and it was a really nice thing to do. But it also like kind of cemented that like delivery food can like kind of be there for you. Delivery can like provide more than just like a single meal. Like you can have groceries delivered. And if you live in a food desert, or you live in a place where there aren't as many like restaurant options, it can be an avenue to like have access to those things.
Yeah, this is something that I remember the DoorDash driver Patricia telling us, where she was saying, yeah, she got into driving for delivery apps for all these reasons, but one of them was that she like really cares about being like active in neighborhood life and building up her community. And she was saying to us that she views driving for these delivery apps as a way to like lessen the gaps between like the food desert that exists in her area in Deanwood and like the rest of the city. Some of the people that she delivers to like are repeat customers, and they're older and they have health issues and they can't get out as often. And so in those cases, yeah, like being able to schlep, do things yourself, that's not a choice. I like really value like independence in my life, but I think it like was this realization, particularly during like the latter part of my 20s, but like also obviously like during the pandemic, that like nobody is like truly independent. So I can prioritize independence like all I want. It does not change the fact that like we live an interconnected life, that I rely on people, and me pretending that independence and schlepping is some sort of virtue is like a disservice, not just to me, but to like everybody else who's helping me, and I don't even realize it. This episode of Dish City was produced by me, Ruth Tam.
And me, Patrick Fort. Our managing producer is Ponsi Rutsch. Steve Lack mixed this show.
Monica Ashvi is WAMU's chief content officer, and she oversees everything we make here. Special thanks to John Palaya.
If you love this episode, subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also support our work by leaving us a tip at wamu.org/supportdishcity. Any amount counts. Thanks so much.
What do you think about delivery? What has this season brought up for you? Email us at dishcity@wamu.org or find us on Twitter and Instagram @dishcity.
We'll see you next time.
See ya.